Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
There are any number of reasons you might consider selling your home. To move closer to family, live within a smaller budget, or just wanting a change of scenery. Whatever your reasons, having to figure out all the various housing market trends in your area may not be what you signed up for. That's where an agent who is a Realtor comes in. Realtors have the expertise to help you find the right price and navigate the process to sell your home in a way that's right for you. That's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Fantasy football doesn't mean anything to me. Like, we're just trying to win games out here, and so I don't know who's hot, who's not, who wins, who doesn't. Like, I don't really care about that. I just care about whether we win. So, yeah, I have fun with that.
Bill Belichick, Patriots head coach, does not care about your fantasy team. We have someone here who deeply cares about all fantasy teams, especially his, Matthew Berry. Welcome. And let me just say this. Let me say this. I'm at an age where I know all the people that I want to know.
Okay, fair.
I'm not looking for new friends.
Yeah.
You know, Jerry Seinfeld has a bit about that. When you're an adult, you got your three or four friends and that's it. Matt Casey knows this very well.
Right.
I am not interested in knowing anyone else. I know all the people that I choose to know. However, I will say that it has been a tremendous delight to get to know you over the past couple of days. I am thrilled that Matthew Berry is now part of the NBC Sports family. So I am making an exception to my usual approach. I have a new friend in Matthew Berry.
I will take that, brother. All right. I will take that. Thank you very much. No, I'm the same way. I don't like any, you know, it's like, right, you have your friends. Like, listen, I have adults that I have to deal with because I have kids. So I have to deal with their parents. And then you've got neighbors and you've got your actual friends. So I'm with you. And I'm flattered. I'm thrilled to be here, thrilled to be part of the NBC Sports family. Everyone has been so welcoming and great. You know, it's a scary transition because I was at ESPN for 15 years. And to come, you know, you never know what to expect. Like, I was, you know, for the first time in a long time, new kid at school, and everyone's been nothing short of amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I went through this 13 years ago when I joined NBC, and you do the same thing, like, what is this going to be? How is this going to be? And everyone has always been great. I mean, for 13 years, it's been great. So I'm thrilled you're here. And it's been great so far, and I look forward to working with you.
Yeah, same.
Indefinitely.
I appreciate that. Yeah, listen. I sure hope so, because you leave something for 15 years. You hope you're not just doing it for a quick stop here. So I'm really excited. It's a homecoming for me. I started my career at Roto World, obviously NBC Sports, and so it's rare that somebody gets a chance to come full circle. And, you know, I feel like I did. So welcome.
I was telling you last night that's how we kind of first got on the NBC radar screen, because we did some work with Roto World and we would sell the draft guides, and they would sell incredibly well. And that caught the eye of Rick Cordella, who became responsible for NBCSports.com. And then everything just kind of fell in place from there.
My very first job at NBC at Roto World was 1999. And I got a job writing for free, writing a fantasy football column for free in 1999. And I think Rick Cordella joined that exact same week, writing player blurbs, like maybe for $50 a week. Like, you know, him and I both basically joined the same week, rotoworld.com. And so, yeah, I mean, so Rick and I have been friends for 20 years.
It's funny because it was 2000, a year later, that I started writing for the old NFLtalk.com website, if you remember that.
Yeah, sure.
For free.
Yeah.
Just for free. It's like, what the hell? What else am I doing?
It's a passion,
hobby.
Right.
Yeah. Because this is the conversation I had with my wife at the time. Because she's like, why are you doing all this stuff and you're not getting paid for it? It's like, well, if I wasn't doing this, I would be doing something that actually cost me money. So at least we're ahead of the game.
Right,
I could
exactly.
go golf
your sum,
and spend $50 and be gone for 6 hours and be pissed off when I get home. Or I could do this and it makes me happy and who cares if they're not paying me. Right. Now that no longer applies, by
right.
the way.
Fair
the
enough.
Event that anyone,
yeah, Rick Cordell, like if you're
yeah.
watching, like,
yeah.
Mike but, and I both have kids. We yeah. we need a paycheck.
But what caused you to even trip into this world? How did that get? So I'm always fascinated by that origin story. How did you end up doing this?
Nerdy kid, candidly. I mean, just I was 14 years old, and so I was 14 years old in 1984, just to date myself. And do you remember, there was a book called Rotisserie League Baseball? Do you remember the phrase Rotisserie League Baseball?
It was the name of the restaurant in Philadelphia,
New York. But
New
yes,
York.
Yeah, La Rotisserie. Yes. Like the people that invented the game would have lunch every week. At a restaurant now, La Rotisserie Française, which it's now defunct, but it was in New York, and they were all literary types, you know, writers of Esquire and the New York Times and columnists. And so they wrote this book, Daniel Okrent and Glenn Wagoner, and they wrote this great book called Rotisserie League Baseball, the greatest game for baseball fans since baseball. And it was basically about fantasy baseball. And so in 1984, that was the first spring after that book came out, there was a league forming. And, like, I was actually a pretty good tennis player as a kid, and I was walking up to my Lennis. I was taking pro lessons, and I hear my coach talking about in this weird language with a buddy of his. I'm like, you guys talking about Rotisserie League Baseball? And they're like, you've heard of it? And I'm like, yeah, you guys had? Because it was just in a book, and I read every sports book I could back then, and they needed another member. So at 14 years old, I joined my first Rotisserie League Baseball League. I have since, in the years past, I've gotten to actually meet Daniel Okrent, the inventor of the game, and do a fantasy baseball draft with him. And we were one of the first 50 leagues in America. And I've been playing ever since. And so 1999, I fast forward to 99.
Quick question.
Yes, sir.
84, your first team. Your first team, who was on it? Do you remember?
Yeah, my very first player that I ever got was Mario Soto.
Nobody cares.
You know, I know. There you go. There you go. Well done. There you go. Exactly. Shout out to Pardon My Take.
That's right.
Right, exactly. And Bill Belichick certainly doesn't care.
Yes.
We can tell by the way he uses running backs. He does not care about fantasy managers. So anyway, 1999, I'm living in Hollywood as a screenwriter for movies and TV. And Roto-World, which I'm on all the time, is advertising for writers. This is 1999. This is the days of AOL and CompuServe. You had to dial up, like, yes. You've got mail. That was a novel thing. Like, ooh, I've got an email. That's exciting. Like, people didn't know. So at any rate, I email them in, and I say, hey, listen, I'm a huge fantasy player. It's my passion. I love it. I'm a professional writer living out here in Hollywood. And I think, you know, it would be so much fun just to write a column on the side for you. Could I try it? Could I send you a sample? And so the legendary Matthew Pouliot, who still works at Roto World today, does all the baseball coverage for us, writes me back and says, Married with Children is my favorite show of all time. I looked you up on IMDb. Married with Children is my favorite show of all time. You're hired. So because I wrote for Married with Children, I got a chance to write a free column for Roto World around fantasy baseball, and column sort of took off. And eventually they started paying me, and just kept going and going. And then in 2004, I felt like I'd developed enough of a following that I could start my own website. People were starting to make money on the internet. So I left Roto World to start talentedmrroto.com, made a deal with Roto World where they would run my columns and just link back to my site. And so I did that for a couple of years, started promoting the site in a bunch of places, one of which was ESPN. And in 07, ESPN came to me and they said, we think fantasy football is big enough that we need a guy. We're looking for our Mel Kiper of fantasy football, and we like all the work you have done for us because I'd been doing Cold Pizza and ESPN News and some of those shows, and they said, we want to buy your website, move you to Connecticut, and make you the guy. And that was in 07, and it was a two-year deal, and wound up being a 15-year run there.
How hard was it to leave? It had to have been after 15 years.
It was. It certainly was. Missed the people. You know, love the people, love my time. Honestly, wasn't looking to leave. And they made me a 3-year extension offer, very kind, a generous, really nice raise. But the opportunity at NBC was just too good to pass up. You know, to be able to talk about fantasy football on Football Night in America, on the number one studio show in the world, like, it was just too good an opportunity to pass up. And I wanted to be a part of NFL coverage, which wasn't a big part of what I did at ESPN. And so, I mean, that's really what it was. It wasn't like, you know, I left with hugs and handshakes. I have nothing bad to say about my time at ESPN.
So you're back on Sunday night now for the first time since Married with Children.
Correct. Right? Yeah, that's exactly right.
How long did you work for that show?
I did 1 year. I did 28 episodes on the show.
How many writers were on the show?
Probably 8 or 9.
That's just got to be a fascinating process. Just sit around and drink and
oh, it was great.
Eat and it maybe was, smoke.
Oh, yeah. It was not, so much.
Maybe the Chris Sims substance just for inspiration.
I never did that. But some people may have.
Contact.
But, you know, yeah, exactly. There you go. But, you know, the great, I mean, it was both awful and awesome. The awesome part about it is it's an amazing show, right? It's this iconic show I joined towards the end. And I'd grown up, and that cast was so incredible. You could write a so-so joke, and Ed O'Neill would make it a home run. You know, or Christine Applegate, or Katie Sagal, or, you know, David Faustino. Like, the cast was amazing. Really great. And, like, if you'd wrote him a good joke, you know, it was a grand slam. And if you wrote him a so-so joke, they'd still sell it and make it work. So that was the great thing. And just, it was so much fun to write for those characters, and it's Married with Children. So sort of everything went, right? You could do all sorts of stuff. The tough part is that there was one guy on staff who'd been there the entire time. They did 259 episodes of the show. And so you'd, like, you're sitting around in the writer's room and you're trying to pitch stuff. And you'd go, hey, you know, what about, so I got this idea. Okay, so Kelly and Bud do blah, 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 blah. And they'd go, you know, there's this one time in season 6 that we sort of did that with Peg. You know, I mean, like, literally every single thing. Like, they had done every episode. Because, again, the show is those four people, that couch, and the shoe store. I mean, it really, you know, I mean, it was so... That was the brilliance of it, the simplicity of it, but it was also like you had to really start thinking about, okay, what about, we kind of did that in season 4. You're like, you know.
That's what amazes me about The Simpsons. Like, how in the hell do The Simpsons keep coming up with new stuff? Because somewhere you've got to have the connective tissue all the way back to the beginning and awareness of everything you've ever done, because you know that there are people out there watching the show who know. They know, and they're going to call you out on it if you do contradict or overlap, or it feels like you're being lazy, and you may as well just do a clip show if you're going to go back and rehash old storylines again.
The executive producer of The Simpsons is a friend of mine, a guy named Matt Selman, brilliant writer, really funny, and I've talked to him about that, and he says the same thing. He says, we actually have to reference other, like, you know, it's just like, I think he was telling me a story, like, I think they did two different episodes where, like a sugar truck or something broke down, and they had to, in the second, they were like, what are the odds of a sugar truck breaking down again? You know, like, they constantly have to, like, sort of wink at the audience and acknowledge, you know, that, yeah, it's going on. I mean, The Simpsons is one of the all-time amazing success stories.
32 years now and still going strong. All right. I could do that all day. I mean, people out there.
People want to talk football.
People want to talk football. But still, I think you have an interesting story. It's fascinating, and it's great to have a chance to talk about it a little bit. And I'm sure we'll talk about it more either on camera or off camera in the coming years. All right. Let's get to the fantasy drafts that folks are already.
Sure.
When's the ideal time to do a fantasy draft? I try to do it as late as possible because you know people are going to get injured during preseason, during training camp. It's going to throw everything upside down. People get all excited about doing it on a certain day in August. I try to delay mine, not that anybody cares, as long as I possibly can. I want to know who's healthy going into the start of the season before I set my team.
1,000%. The best time to do a draft for a league, if you're setting up for a league, is as late as possible for that you know, to that point. But if you're doing your own draft, i.e. if you're in a best ball or you're competing against people you don't know, I actually think for somebody like you, you'd want to draft as early as possible because you're aware of training camp battles or players that are going to be more valuable later in the season than perhaps maybe the average person. So when you have more information, you're aware like, oh, you know, I know they really like this rookie, you know, and he's not on people's radar yet. But, like, so you can get value there. But I think for an entire league, you could. We did one of the shows I did at ESPN was called The Fantasy Show, and we did a sketch that we ran every year that was really great. And we did it the year that, like, Jordy Nelson left early, you know, he tore his ACL in training camp, right? It was Jordy Nelson, and there were a couple other big-name players that were suddenly out for the year, and it was all these people complaining, like, I just lost Jordy Nelson from – how can I – I just lost Jordy Nelson from my fantasy team. How can I do it? Like, we've got this revolutionary product, new product. It's called a calendar. With a calendar, you can figure out when the season starts and have your draft the day before. This is how you solve injuries in the preseason, with a calendar. And so, you know, it was like, what a pro. And it was all, it was very infomercial and over the top and did really well for us and went viral and the whole thing. But yeah, that, I mean, you're, Mike, you're exactly right. Like, ideally, it's the day before the season. And I know leagues that will do their drafts on the Friday and Saturday after the Thursday night game. I know at NBC we're opening up the season with Bills at Rams, and they'll do it that weekend, you know, and just count the stats from the first game retroactively. But I think that first week, either that weekend before that Thursday game or that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday before the Thursday night game.
I mean, I think for all fans, whether it's fantasy football or you're a fan of a certain team, that's what August is so much about, just fretting what's going to happen when they start playing the preseason games, because you know it's inevitable. Yeah, guys are going to get injured during training camp, but still they go easier than they used to, sure, even though it still happens. But once you get into those games, I remember that Nelson injury. It was a preseason game at Pittsburgh, yeah, and it just, you know, boom, there it is, and he's done for the year, and it changes how you feel about the Packers. It changes how you, you know, changes a lot of things. And
that happened fairly – I mean, it was like a week – I remember I had so for a number of years, I was in a league with the Howard Stern Show guys. So I'm a big Howard fan, have been for years. And I was in a league with a bunch of those guys, and that was like my first year in the league. And Jordy Nelson was my second-round pick. I'm like, you know, like, here's this league that's going to be talked about on the air, and, you know, I'm coming in as the expert, and they're all going to be gunning for me. And I just lost my second-round pick. We haven't played a game. What are we doing?
Is it proven, because it sure feels this way, that every year the guy who is the consensus no-brainer number one ends up being a major disappointment? Isn't that, it just feels like that, like Christian McCaffrey, he's the guy, and every year there's that guy that everyone's got to have. It just seems like more often than not that guy ends up being a disappointment because it's a running back who gets banged up in some
right
way.
Sometimes, I mean, it's been tough. Just the last 2 years it's been Christian McCaffrey, right? And so obviously the last 2 years have been disappointing for him. But I think the year before that, I'd have to think about that. No, but I mean, there have been times when, like, Todd Gurley, you know, Todd yep. Gurley would number one, and he would produce. McCaffrey would go high, like he'd be two or three, and he would obviously, he was great up until the last 2 years, and McCaffrey produced when he was on the field. It is, I mean, it's all sort of injury based. We always say, or I always say, you can't win your league in the first round. You can lose it. In the first round, you just want as safe production as you can get, but injuries are a part of it, right?
Who's,
I mean,
the
so
guy this year?
The question is like with Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry was a top pick last year. Was Derrick Henry a good pick or a bad pick? Because up until he got hurt, Derrick Henry was fantastic. I mean, he was winning people their leagues, and then he gets injured and you're done, right? I mean, so it is.
I haven't really thought about it yet this year because I delay my draft as long as possible. But who is that consensus number one guy this year?
It's Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, that makes sense.
Right?
Because this is the year. Because he's already shown it, and this is year three, and off we go. And you got Matt Ryan at quarterback, and yep.
They should be in scoring position, and the offensive line is great. I have McCaffrey at two. I've seen other people that have McCaffrey at one. The argument for McCaffrey at one is just like, it's all risky. Every running back is a risk to get injured on every play. So why not go with a guy that has the highest upside? And that's probably McCaffrey, right? You know, that just when McCaffrey's healthy, he's just been nothing short of amazing. He has more pass-catching ability than Jonathan Taylor, although they used Taylor more in the passing game last year than I think people thought. So there's more upside with McCaffrey. But again, like, my take is always, I'd rather try – I don't want to lose the league in the first round. So I have McCaffrey, too, because there is some injury risk there. I mean, after 2 years, at some point you kind of got like, all right.
And you've got the uncertainty now. We assume Baker Mayfield's going to be the quarterback, right, but we don't know. We don't know how it's going to go. You've got Ben McAdoo as the offensive coordinator. You got everybody on the hot seat there. That's got to be a factor in how reliable it is that McCaffrey, even if he's healthy, is going to have the kind of impact that we've seen him have in past years.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, they may try to limit – I mean, they brought in some guys.
Oh, and the guy they got from Tennessee.
Deontay Foreman.
He was awesome last
year. Fantastic. What a great story that kid is, right? I mean, because he
was ready to give up. He was ready to give up.
He had a serious injury, and he was nothing short of amazing filling in for Henry, speaking of Derrick Henry, last year. And so, and they have Chuba Hubbard, and so they have a little bit more depth than they have previously at that position, and they may be like, hey, we don't want McCaffrey to have as many touches as he has previously. And you're right, it is really interesting. You've got a guy in McAdoo who's been a head coach, and who's had a bunch of different offensive schemes. Like, his offensive scheme with the Giants different than when he was with the Packers, right? which obviously when you got Eli versus Aaron Rodgers, you tailor it a little bit differently to those quarterbacks. So it'll be interesting what he does with Baker. And then you've got Matt Rhule, who's an offensive-minded coach. And so how does that mesh? And, yeah, there's a lot of question marks around Carolina this year.
You made some fascinating comments last night on the pregame show about Jalen Hurts, because there is this great disconnect between, is a guy a good quarterback? Is he a good fantasy quarterback? And I see a lot of connections and similarities between Jalen Hurts and Tua Tagovailoa, although the vibe is different. In Philly, it's like they're trying to build him up.
Yeah.
In Miami, it's like they're trying to eliminate all excuses and put it all on him. Even though as they enter year three and they've been kind of similar, Hurts has been better. But when you look at Hurts, explain to us why he stands out. You've got him at number four among all quarterbacks. Why is he where he is when you've got so many Eagles fans who still don't know what they have in Jalen Hurts?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Philly fans are never happy. I mean, that's the other thing, too, right?
Winning a Super Bowl made them worse.
It did.
It's like they got a taste of crack and they want more of it now. I'm sorry to you, but I'm saying they're worse now than they were before they won a Super Bowl.
Right. So for people watching, they've thrown it up on the screen here where my quarterbacks rank this year. And so, you know, one of the things I made on air, the points I made on air, Chris Sims and I were talking about this and debating Hurts. And I said, yeah, look, you don't have to be a good NFL quarterback to be a good fantasy quarterback. I mean, I have Aaron Rodgers at 8. I have Tom Brady at 5 among fantasy quarterbacks. But, you know, those are two of the greatest to ever play the game and are still playing, obviously, at a very, very elite level. To answer your question about Jalen Hurts, the rushing ability. So, I mean, Jalen Hurts, and I think a lot of people have said, last year was an uneven year for Jalen Hurts from an NFL standpoint. He was the 9th best quarterback in fantasy last year. And it's because of the rushing, right? And so the fact that you get fantasy points with both your legs and your arm, this is what Hurts does. And if you look at my list, other than Rodgers and Brady, it's all guys that get points with both their arm and their legs. You've got Josh Allen, you've got Lamar Jackson, Kyler Murray, you know, guys like that, right? And so Lamar Jackson, et cetera, and Jalen Hurts there at number 4. Here's the thing that I think people forget about Hurts. So Hurts comes into the NFL. He gets 4 games. He gets 4 games at a time when the organization was dysfunctional. I mean, you know, so Doug Peterson is fighting with Howie Roseman. People are injured. Jalen Hurts comes in for the final 4 games of his rookie year. His best receiver is Greg Ward, AAF superstar Greg Ward, former college quarterback Greg Ward. That's his best wide receiver. Now, Greg Ward's a nice story, but come on. He's not a number one NFL wide receiver, and that's who Jalen Hurts is being thrown into with all this turmoil that's going on around Peterson. And obviously, 4 games later, Peterson leaves the Eagles. Okay, so, and he mostly runs. But now, in his last year, this is his second year, he goes out, and it's his first year under Sirianni. And people are questioning, no one questions the athleticism, they understand the legs. But with Jalen Hurts, the question is, well, what about the accuracy? And so I went back and I looked at, and I remember those were the concerns about Josh Allen. What about, you know, we know he's got a cannon for an arm, but he's not accurate. And so, and if you look at his second season in the NFL, Josh Allen's second season in the NFL, and you compare it with Jalen Hurts' second season in the NFL, which we just got through, Jalen Hurts has more passing yards than Josh Allen. He's got a higher completion percentage than Josh Allen. He's got more rushing yards. He has the same number of interceptions. They both had 9 in that second year. And they average basically the same in terms of touchdowns per game. What happened in year 3? Josh Allen got Stephon Diggs and suddenly became a lot better, right? And his completion percentage went way up. And he wound up that year as the number one fantasy quarterback, number one QB in fantasy. What happened this year? They went out and got him A.J. Brown, who, for people that aren't aware, A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts are very good friends off the field. They have a real connection. Now they're obviously teammates. Second year of Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert. You could make an argument that Jalen Hurts has better weapons around him than Josh Allen had in his third year.
Yes.
And second year in the system, I'm just saying that, again, he was QB9 last year and struggled. My expectation here is that you always in fantasy, you talk about range of outcomes. Being the number one quarterback in fantasy is within the range of outcomes for Jalen Hurts. He's currently going as quarterback 8. I think that's too low. I'm a QB4. I'm a believer in Jalen Hurts, especially with that offensive line and that schedule. They open up with Detroit. They've got Jacksonville. Their first 4 games are pretty easy. And so I think that there's a good chance through those first 4 games, he goes 3-1. And all the Boo Birds and the Eagle Talk, Philly Talk Radio are like, okay, we can ease up. And you sort of get into that rhythm, and now you're feeling good about yourself.
The irony here is that the weapons in the passing game give him a way to pivot toward throwing it more, which actually could diminish the appeal of Jalen Hurts as a runner. Because last year, I think Nick Sirianni, first-year head coach at the time, consciously said, look, what do we got here? We got to win some games.
Right.
The passing game isn't our strong suit. Let's redesign this. Let's reconfigure it. Let's run it more. But if they can open up the passing game, that diminishes that double threat to a certain extent. That's part of the risk.
A little bit, I think, but two things. Number one is I still think, you know, if you watch those games, there's sometimes that, again, Hurts as a inexperienced quarterback in the pros, sometimes will, like, he'll take off and run. Right? You know, when he doesn't see something there, a lot of quarterbacks maybe throw it away. Hurts is a guy that will take off and run and often make it work. So I think there's that. And there's also, you know, being mobile like that allows you to open up the passing game, because a lot of times now you got to keep a spy linebacker on Hurts and everything like that. So, you know, I think Sirianni is a good coach, and I think they will add to that playbook. But again, if you look at sort of my top, you know, 10 quarterbacks, a lot of the guys that are the elite fantasy quarterbacks, all you can point that, you know, same with Lamar Jackson, same with Kyler Murray, right? Same with Josh Allen, right? And so on and on and on and on.
You've got Lamar Jackson at number 6. How hard is it to evaluate him given the injury last year, given the periodic he's not able to practice or play because of some sort of a stomach ailment? He doesn't have a contract with the team. It's going to be awkward potentially. I don't believe he's going to sign a contract before the start of the season. I think there's a chance he never signs another contract with the Baltimore Ravens. How much does that kind of stuff, because I know it's very analytics-based and it's equations, sure, and it's formulas, range of outcomes. How do you take those uncertainties, availability questions, and turn that into something that gives you a number that you can assess as to where a guy should be?
You try to just basically focus on what you do know, right? And so for me, in the case of Lamar Jackson, the contract stuff, he's going to ball out. Like, he's going to play this year for the Baltimore Ravens. And so if there's any off-the-field distractions, you can't really focus on that. The injury thing is interesting, as is what I more look for is, like, okay, so last year the Ravens were 9th in pass attempts. They're the 9th most pass attempts. And so this year, but they let Marquise Brown go, and they don't do anything major at pass catcher in either the draft or free agency. Like, I know they're very high on Rashad Bateman. Mark Andrews came off for a career year last year. But that's pretty much it. The rest of them are a bunch of guys that we'll see if somebody else emerges. But in terms of the bolstering of the offensive line, they're getting J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards back. Remember last year, both guys tore their ACLs, yep, in preseason. We talked about it. Once again, same thing. This is why you hold your draft as close as possible, because J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards were both very popular picks last year in fantasy, especially Dobbins. And so the expectation is that they get back to their running ways, because last year they were, you know, they had street free agents. They lost Ronnie Staley in the preseason as well. So they sort of aired it out last year. I don't think they will. But for me, you're like, okay, well, if they're going to run a lot, that's going to be a lot of Lamar. And so, but again, there's slight concerns. I've seen people have Lamar as high as 3 or 4. I have him at 6 because of those concerns. I think he passes less when he's running more. That's more opportunity for injury. And again, if Bateman doesn't take the next step, you're like, I mean, it's Mark Andrews and then just a bunch of guys at the moment.
I know that you have a history of joking about when you get a new contract, Haynesworthing it.
Yeah, total Haynesworth.
I'm not going to let you Haynesworth it yet here.
Okay.
I'm keeping you for another segment.
Done.
You can Haynesworth it after we're done, because Rodney apparently is Haynesworthing it and not showing up.
Yeah.
Which we had it just under 50-50. I don't know whether I took the over or the under, but we had a feeling. It had a long night. Look, I'm not – I love Rodney, but he's not here. You are.
Well, listen, I'm the newbie.
That's
I'm the
right.
newbie. Rodney's been here.
Rodney's got the privilege to sleep, but otherwise just not show up. And that's fine. We're going to take a quick break. We'll have more with the fantasy football GOAT, Matthew Berry, when PFT Live continues right after this.
With Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer. with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Memorial Day savings for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow mulch. 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Last week, Justin Jefferson talked about you, saying Coop is good, but I'll rank myself above him. Do you care to give your thoughts on that comment?
No, I would hope he would say that. You know, I think that's the beauty of this game, and I think it speaks to the competitiveness of this league. You know, I don't think if you're not putting yourself as the best, and you're not working to be the best, then I think I'd be concerned about stepping on the field with you if you don't feel like you've prepared to be the best player that you can be. So, you know, I respect his opinion, and I can also respectfully disagree.
Keep waiting for that beard to end up going full ZZ Top for Cooper Kupp. That's a disappointment. He didn't grow it out a little bit more in the offseason. Justin Jefferson puts himself ahead of Cooper Kupp. Matthew Berry disagrees. Kupp number one, Jefferson number two. There's the top 10 that Matthew has put together for this year's fantasy receivers. Matthew Berry still with us on set. What do you got?
Before we move on, so seeing Cooper Kupp there, fun story about fantasy. We were just talking about Bill Belichick, you know, saying he doesn't care about your fantasy team. But we had on my show last year, we had Cooper Kupp's father. So Cooper Kupp's father, who, by the way, former pro quarterback, backed up Troy Aikman for a number of years, plays in a fantasy league with a bunch of his buddies, a bunch of his college buddies. And every year, they just let him have Kupp, and they let him have his son. And last year, because Kupp was so amazing, they made a rule he's not allowed to have his son anymore. Like, they, you know, like if you want your son, you have to draft him now. We're not going to let you just have your own kid. And I asked him, I said, like, did you explain to them, like, hey, why don't you produce your own all-star football players? It's not my fault. I have all-pro DNA, and you guys don't, you know. But no, but I just thought that was very funny. Like, Cooper Kupp's father is not allowed to draft Cooper Kupp anymore.
And he really was incredible last year. Almost set the single-season record for yards and what was it? Yards,
receptions, touchdowns, yeah, fantasy points, everything. A monster year. A monster year from start to finish.
And what concerns me now, we talked about this earlier in the program as it relates to Matthew Stafford and the elbow, the tendonitis.
Sure.
If for some reason he misses time and it's John Wolford, I know it's system-driven, but still, there's a difference between Stafford and Wolford.
Of course.
That's going to affect Kupp's overall production.
Sure.
And it's impossible. It's impossible to factor that in.
Yeah.
Did you factor any of this uncertainty with Stafford in any way into this? Or this is just Kupp in that system and what he did last year, he's the guy?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. And you have to deal with what you know, right? As far as we know, as of this morning, Matthew Stafford's going to play, you know, all 17 games. If that changes, right, then you adjust. But it's hard to adjust but there's no question. Stafford misses time, that affects Cooper Kupp, that affects Allen Robinson. Honestly, it would affect Cam Akers and Daryl Henderson because you expect them to lean on the run game a little bit more, right? You know, and so it sort of opens everything up. And, you know, it's really interesting, you know, thinking about the Rams as an offensive unit, because, you know, they went from a team that you felt was sort of loaded, and now you're like, it gets pretty dicey. Van Jefferson's banged up as well, and so you're sort of like, they've got Higbee, who they like a lot, obviously a tight end, but like it feels, after Cooper Kupp and Allen Robinson, it feels pretty thin for a team that, you know, had a lot of depth. Obviously, Beckham's not back with the team yet, and we'll see what ends up happening there and if he plays this year. And I don't know. So the Rams are fascinating.
Jefferson's got a good chance to pass him this year just because of the fact that he generated so much last year in an offense that wasn't as creative as it presumably will be this year with Kevin O'Connell, the former Rams assistant, now running the show. The Vikings have an offensive coach for the first time since Brad Childress. They're moving Jefferson all around the place like Kupp. He's been saying that since Kevin O'Connell got the job. He was the happiest guy, I think, in Minnesota when O'Connell gets the job, because he gets the chance to be the Cooper Kupp in that offense, and he's got everybody. You can't survive in this league if you don't have a tremendous amount of confidence. That's like Kupp said. I'd like to think he would say that. You're not going to say, no, I'm number five. But I think he could be really, really good this year, considering how good he was last year with the limitations the team had.
He's a special player. I have it too.
Yeah.
But, you know, but it's hard to, Justin Jefferson confidence aside, it is hard to put him above Cooper Kupp. It's hard to put anyone above Cooper Kupp. I mean, Cooper Kupp's season last year was historic. Well, I mean, like literally like Randy Moss, you know, I mean, like, the number of records Cooper Kupp set last year. And so now you go to Justin Jefferson, but I think this is really interesting. So I did a column for NBC Sports Edge called 100 Facts, which is up now. And I have a bunch of facts about Kirk Cousins, and this obviously relates to Justin Jefferson. I mean, like, just look at those numbers. Justin Jefferson had a monster year, and he was still over 300 passing yards, you know, below. He still was, like, you know, almost 40 receptions behind him, 6 touchdowns behind him. And again, Jefferson, I mean, like, Cooper Kupp probably could have stopped playing in, I want to say, like, week 14 and still would have been the number one wide receiver in fantasy. That's just how stupid the numbers are for Cooper Kupp. Having said that about Jefferson, though, let's talk about this Vikings offense for a second. I think this is pretty interesting, okay? Here's the entire list of quarterbacks that have thrown at least 30 touchdown passes each of the last 2 years. Okay, here's the list. Aaron Rodgers, makes sense. Tom Brady, that makes sense. Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, and Kirk Cousins. That's the list. Like, so you've got the 5 guys that are, like, at the top of the fantasy charts, the top of, you know, all pros, and then Kirk Cousins. And no one ever likes Kirk Cousins. You know what I mean? He's like, eh, he's meh. But Kirk Cousins, again, those are the guys that I just mentioned are the only people with more total touchdown passes over the last 2 years than Cousins. Under Mike Zimmer last year, they were bottom 14 in pass rate. And to your point, and he's had, by the way, Cousins has had at least 4,000 passing yards 6 of the last 7 seasons. Doesn't get hurt. Is there the upside of Kirk Cousins? Is Kirk Cousins going to magically put you on his back and win you a game the way that a Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes or Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady can? No. But he's better than I think he gets credit for.
Agreed.
I think he is a top 10, top 12-ish quarterback, both in real life and in fantasy. And to your point, now he gets Kevin O'Connell and Wes Phillips over from the Rams, who just helped Matthew Stafford to the best year of his career. Stafford was a top 5 fantasy quarterback last year and a Super Bowl champion. And so I think people are sleeping a little bit on this Vikings offense, and especially Kirk Cousins. Fantasy-wise, like, again, he's you know, inside my top 13, right? He's nothing – there's a limited upside. But there's also a limited downside. And for your deeper league, your 2-quarterback league, I think Cousins is interesting. Jefferson should be number 2. Speaking of those Vikings, by the way, I think Irv Smith is an interesting sleeper as well. He's healthy. And Adam Thielen's being left for dead. Like, Adam Thielen was very productive last year. Like, just because he's not as good as Justin Jefferson at this point of his career, Adam Thielen is still a really good NFL wide receiver. Still a really, really great route runner. And that is an offense that is going to throw a lot. Oh,
they're
going to
throw a lot more than they have, and they may throw it more effectively, and they may have more plays designed where Cousins doesn't have the walls closed in. That's the biggest problem for him. When the walls close in, it's over.
Yeah.
He can't do anything with his legs like a Mahomes or an Allen can do. We need to take a quick break. When we return, though, I want to ask Matthew Berry about the challenges of trying to figure out where guys fit when receivers change one team to another, one quarterback to another, specifically with Tyreek Hill in Miami. We'll talk about that next on this Friday edition of PFT Live. This was 6 days ago. Back together Saturday, somebody rolling the video, and that is Tua Tagovailoa, the left-handed throw, 65 yards in the air, trying to overthrow Tyreek Hill. But that's Tyreek Hill. You cannot overthrow Tyreek Hill. All right, Matthew Berry here still with us. And there is a dynamic this year, especially with so many.
At least he hit him in stride, by the way.
He had to actually lay out for it a little bit. Yeah. Tyreek Hill, when you make Tyreek Hill do that, you've really put a lot on it, because that's Tyreek Hill. So you got Tyreek Hill changing teams. Devontae Adams changing teams. A.J. Brown, we talked about him earlier. He changes teams. Let's focus on Tyreek Hill, because you go from Patrick Mahomes.
Sure.
And Tyreek Hill has been phenomenal. Now you've got the questions. Is Tua going to be able to do that in a game? Are they going to have to work to get the ball in Tyreek's hands? How do you, because you've got him at number 8, some people would say it's a little low. How big of an impact is that, that you go from a known situation where you've got Mahomes to who knows what we're going to get?
I mean, it's obviously, I think if he's back in Kansas City, he's probably, you know, wide receiver 2 or 3. So you discount a little bit. Phenomenal talent. They paid him a ton of money. He's obviously going to be a focal point of that offense. We are bullish on Mike McDaniel, right, based on what he's done
he's
in San
awesome.
Francisco.
He is just awesome.
Yeah. So we're really bullish on Mike McDaniel, what that offense is going to look like. And we believe, or I believe, that he will manufacture touches for Tyreek Hill. And they will be creative about getting the ball in his hands in space in a variety of different ways. But to your point, right, you have to look at the entire situation, because now he goes to a quarterback that's a downgrade. You know, I'm not trying to dump on Tua, but he ain't Patrick Mahomes, right? That is a downgrade. Even if Tua has
Tyreek
a great year.
Is the only one who thinks that it's not a downgrade.
Right.
Or that, yeah, he still says that Tua is the most accurate quarterback in the NFL, and I think most people realize with a functioning brain that Tua's got some work to do to prove to anyone that he's accurate and reliable and can do what he did in a game, what we saw in that clip from last Saturday.
And then you also think about who else the Dolphins have, right? So they've added Jaylen Waddle. They added Cedric Wilson. They have Gesicki. They have guys that can be used in the passing game. This is why I think the Dolphins are a fascinating offense this year. So they add Chase Edmonds. They add Raheem Mostert. Raheem Mostert's a better pass-catching running back than I think people realize. And so they have a lot of guys that are going to be able to touch the ball and do a bunch of things. So I'm fascinated to watch what this Dolphins offense is. But I think there is a – so Tyreek Hill's still going to get his, but maybe does he get as big a target share as he had in Kansas City? Are there as many explosive plays as they had in Kansas City? I mean, Patrick Mahomes can flick his wrist and it goes 80 yards, right? And so Tua just – I don't know that – this side of Josh Allen that anyone has the arm strength of Patrick Mahomes, right? So we think there's a downgraded quarterback. It is a new system. There are more mouths to feed in that Dolphins offense, but he's still Tyreek Hill. He's still insanely fast. He's still faster than Ya, his old Twitter handle, right? And so he comes in at number 8 for me. We expect a very good year, but not as good a year as he's had in Kansas City, at least from a fantasy perspective. It is interesting, though, that the Dolphins have said, like, listen to him. If it doesn't work this year, it ain't on us.
Yeah.
Like, we're giving you an offensive-minded coach. We're adding all these pieces. Jaylen Waddle was awesome last year. Like,
improve the offensive line with Tron Armstead. Yeah. It's no excuses 2022 for Tua Tagovailoa without question. And Tyreek, one of the many things he said on It Needed to Be Said, his podcast, is that he recognizes that first-round pick, third-year quarterback, if you don't get it done, you're done. And I think whether he intends to or not, he is putting extra pressure on him by saying all these things. We'll see if Tua can live up to it.
Right. And what's weird is I actually feel bad for Tua.
Yes.
Because he comes in the league, banged up hip. The franchise has obviously gone through a lot of turmoil and now continues to. Obviously, there's a lot of off-the-field stuff that if you're Tua in your court, they're going to ask him about it. And even it's just like, I don't know, it was before I got here. Or like, I was just trying to win games. And, you know, whatever. There's a lot of stuff that happens that, but it's
his entire career. It starts off, we want Joe Burrow, we'll take Tua. Then it's, we want Deshaun Watson, we'll settle for Tua. Oh, we want Tom Brady, we'll just stick with Tua. And after this year, it's going to be somebody else if Tua doesn't get it done. Let me ask about Davante Adams, because we're running out of time here. You mentioned target share, and I heard you say this either on the air or off air in the past couple of days, the idea that you go from Green Bay, where you're the guy, and now you're in Las Vegas with Darren Waller and Hunter Renfrow, and even though you still may be one of the best receivers in the NFL, you're not going to have the production because you're not getting the ball as much as you were.
He had a north of 30% target share in Green Bay each of the last 3 years. North of 30%. I mean, massive. And so going from Aaron Rodgers to Derek Carr is a downgrade. There are more weapons, more mouths to feed. He goes to a coach in Josh McDaniels. The Patriot way is always about trying to share the love. And now... Davante Adams still amazing, but given the lack of target share and going from Rodgers to Carr, he's a guy that usually is the number one wide receiver in fantasy. I am at number 4. Look, it's sort of those two-way street, and this is a debate you always have in fantasy. He's going to get less balls because there's more competition, right? So he's got Waller and Renfrow, players that he didn't have next to him in Green Bay. But also, he's got Waller and Renfrow. In Green Bay, you're like, we're going to double and triple team Davante Adams, and we'll take our chances with Alan Lazard or Marquez Valdes-Scantling or whatever. And here they're going to be like, well, we'll kill you with Waller or Renfrow or whatever. So you'll probably see less double coverage and triple coverage and less defenses rolling to him this year. But he's also going to get less targets. Whatever. He's Davante Adams. He's going to be just fine. Wide receiver 4. If he's your number one wide receiver, you're going to be just fine this year.
We're going to be just fine with Matthew Berry here as part of the NBC Sports family, the fantasy football GOAT. We need to take a break. We'll have more PFT Live for you right after this. A
apparently some news is breaking.
I hear your phone falling on the. I knew you were barely listening to me, and I could tell you were looking at your phone.
She has found that Deshaun Watson violated the personal conduct policy and suspended him 6 games. I think there's going to be a lot of people out there who, when they hear about this, they're going to be upset.
Now the Browns can kind of somewhat formulate a plan here. The team can start looking at it and go, oh, man, if we can just get through that first 6 games, 3-3, 4-2, give ourselves a fighting chance for when Watson gets back, watch out. We know their team is really good, so that's got to excite Cleveland for sure.
I don't think this Watson thing is even close to being over. The way this thing's written, there's enough there for the commissioner.
It doesn't read like 6 games. I know that.
To say I can do a lot more. You have found, as a factual matter, enough to let me say I'm doing 17 if I want to do 17.
When you hear, like, basically lie, sexual predator, showing no remorse for the actions you did. I mean, when you just get through some of those parts of it right there, you go, wait, this has ended up being a 6-game suspension? And that's where I guess I'm a little confused by it, and that's where I guess I get to the point of, like you're saying, that the NFL is going to swoop in here, and I expect them to add more games to this Deshaun Watson suspension.
I don't want to engage in hyperbole here. Brian Flores is a hero. He's a hero for pushing back against Stephen Ross and ignoring Stephen Ross. If you're going to put credence in the things Brian Flores is saying, you can't pick or choose what you're going to believe and what you're not going to believe.
Exactly.
Well, we believe Brian Flores when he reduced to writing his concerns about Stephen Ross expressing his belief that draft position takes precedence over win-loss record, but we're not going to believe him when he says that he took that offer
seriously. Totally serious, right.
And my sources have been pretty strong with this, that there was even compensation discussed with Tampa and Miami, all right?
Everything was done.
Yes.
It was just a matter of the first domino being hit,
right?
And Brian Flores grabbed the first domino and threw it out the window.
Right.
If the Dolphins tampered with Tom Brady
they were already in the
and
inside
got
track.
Him,
right.
How could a team that didn't tamper with him get him?
Yeah, right.
If the team that was talking to him failed,
right.
How could it be that a team that followed all the rules and had no direct communications with him until the league year began in 2020, how in the hell did that team get him? They tampered too.
I'm still here, and I'm blessed to be here. You know, if it has to do with support from the team, I think the team's all in with me and all the guys that we have now.
See, if I'm Tua, what I say yesterday is, guys, this is nothing compared to having Deshaun Watson hanging over my head half of the season.
That would have been a good way to defuse it. You're right.
They've been trying to get rid of me for a year.
So what? What's new? Hey, don't be too hurt by it, Tua. There's a lot of people that would want Tom Brady. I mean, so it's not necessarily always personal to you that way. It is Tom Brady. He's a different stratosphere. He's the GOAT, all of that. So a lot of teams are going to want him in town for, his play and the business aspect of it. But, hey, you know, they are all in on what they got now, and that's what all he should worry about.
The preseason has begun. It won't continue until next weekend. Until then, we'll be paying very careful attention to what happens next with Deshaun Watson. Remember this, there are no specific dates or deadlines for a resolution of the appeal that the NFL filed to the NFL itself. The requirement is that it be expedited. I expect to hear something sooner rather than later. One of the potential skirmishes, whether or not there will be an actual appeal hearing. As I said earlier, the personal conduct policy doesn't call for one. The CBA doesn't call for one. The NFL Players Association may ask for one. We'll see whether or not that ultimately happens. The NFLPA will be filing its brief at some point today that will be pushing back against the NFL's argument. As I said earlier, it could get ugly between the league and the union. There could be other steps that happen. This is going to continue to be one of the biggest stories in the National Football League. And I've got a lot of other angles and opinions that I want to share at ProFootballTalk.com. What I'm doing after this show ends, I'm jumping in my car. I am heading home. And once I get back, you'll see more from me at PFT. Until then, check out all the stuff that is written there by the rest of the crew, MDS, Josh Alper, Shereen Williams, and Miles Simmons. Thanks again to Miles for getting up extra early and joining me. And thanks so much to Matthew Berry joining NBC Sports this week. Spent a lot of time with us today. You'll hear and see plenty more from him in the coming days. That's it for now. We'll be back on Monday. Have a great weekend.
Hey.
It's one thing falling in love with a house, picturing yourself moving in and calling it home, and quite another navigating the world of price negotiating, mortgage lenders, and finding the budget that works best for you. An agent who's a Realtor can make understanding that world easier. Realtors have the expertise, access to proprietary data, and tools to help you get from imagining living somewhere to actually doing it. That's the kind of help we can provide. Because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.